From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez may soon have more to say in capital punishment cases. That's a provision tucked into the recently authorized USA Patriot Improvement and Reauthorization Act. This would give the country's top prosecutor the power to place death penalty cases on the fast track. For more and to find out what Congress plans to do about it, we've got Melissa Harris-Lacewell, Associate Professor of Politics and African American Studies at Princeton University, and Ron Christie, Vice President of the lobbying firm DC Navigators, and a former special assistant to President George W. Bush. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for
having
us. Nice
to be with you.
So what's the current appeals under the death penalty, and how does this change it? Ron?
What this provision that has been inserted in the Patriot Act says is that inmates who are appealing their federal conviction under a process known as habeas corpus or release the body, what the new provision provides is an expedited review. For example, up to a year's amount of time it can pass right now under current law. What the current change in the Patriot Act says is that appeal time will be reduced by half. In essence, what you're trying to do, Farai, is those individuals, those inmates who are facing death row penalty convictions, what they often do is they file many habeas corpus petitions, often to try to get out of their death penalty conviction or just, frankly, to prolong their ultimate sentence. And so what this provision does is it streamlines the process for habeas corpus, makes it a short amount of time, and it makes the courts act quicker looking at the merits of that specific habeas corpus petition so that inmates can't drag this out forever.
Now, Melissa, this isn't the first time that habeas corpus has been adjusted. Even under the Clinton administration, it was. And now with all of this focus on people who are being exonerated from death row, people who might have been otherwise killed, how does this play out on the political landscape?
Well, it's an interesting tactic because one of the most successful ways the death penalty opponents have been able to make a case, part of it is, as you pointed out, showing the people who have been exonerated. But the other has been demonstrating to states and to state legislators just how expensive it is to have the death penalty. In other words, it costs states a great deal to have death penalty candidates there, you know, filing their habeas corpus, moving forward into the system. So death penalty opponents have been able to demonstrate to very budget-minded state legislators that it's, in fact, in their financial interest not to have the death penalty. And it's been useful for those of us who are opponents of capital punishment to use this as a way to explain, you know, at least one reason why we shouldn't have the death penalty. So fast-tracking with the attorney general at the federal level having the say about which cases can be fast-tracked is really a way of getting around one of the most effective strategies of death penalty opponents.
And Ron, do you think that there's going to be another debate on this? Because there have been many instances, this week we just talked about domestic spying, where there are laws passed and then because of the volatile nature of the Congress, they're reconsidered. Do you think this will be put back on the table at some point?
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, again, I think that there are those in Congress who are opponents of the death penalty who, once they realize what they actually voted on, and again, it shows that members of Congress don't always read or reflect on what they vote on when it goes before the Congress, but it wouldn't surprise me if we have that discussion. But again, I think it is important to take partisan politics out of this, and for those inmates who are using the habeas corpus petition as a way to prolong their ultimate sentence, I think that's the wrong way to go about it, and I am in favor of streamlining the process. We'll just have to see how the political leaders deal with it.
All right. We need to move on to another topic. This one, I'm sure, will be spicy. In a speech at the Veterans of Foreign Wars National Convention Wednesday, President Bush compared the war in Iraq with the Vietnam War. He warned that a troop withdrawal now would lead to countless civilian deaths due to Iraq not being stable enough without the aid of the U.S. military. Now, the Iraq-Vietnam comparison has often been made by progressives who are against the war. Is this a change in the debate, Melissa?
Well, it's interesting that a metaphor can be used on either side, right? That comparing it to Vietnam, depending on sort of where you stood on that question, then depends on whether or not you see the war in Iraq as something that should continue. I think the big question, both in terms of military strategy and in terms of sort of ethical politics relative to the military, is whether or not our presence in Iraq is making things better or worse. Are we saving fish from drowning? In other words, are we standing there and dragging the fish out of the water and putting them on dry land and saying, oh, we've rescued you, when in fact it may be that the fish would be better off if we left?
Now, Ron, Keith Olbermann, the MSNBC anchor who doesn't really shy away from giving his opinion, said, if you try to pursue a war for which the nation has lost its stomach, you and it are finished. Just ask Lyndon Johnson. Johnson, of course, presiding over Vietnam. Aside from the other issues about the war, is this just an unwinnable fight politically inside the U.S.?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I think what the president made clear in his speech yesterday is a very important distinction. He said, and I'm quoting, one unmistakable legacy of Vietnam is the price of America's withdrawal was paid by millions of innocent civilians. If you look at the Khmer Rouge, the killing fields in Cambodia, millions of innocent people lost their lives because the United States government, the United States military, was not in a position to provide protection for these innocent people. The same sort of analogy can be drawn in Iraq. The Sunnis and the Shia have a very delicate balance going on right now. And don't forget the Kurds in the northern part of Iraq. If the United States military were to leave right now, you would find yourself in sectarian violence fueled by religious hatred, animosity, and whatnot, and millions of civilians, I believe, could ultimately lose their life in that sectarian violence. The most important thing for the United States, what I believe at this point, is to provide insurance for the Iraqi people that we will help them. We will help them as they are propping up a government. We will help them as they are solidifying their democracy so that they can govern themselves. But a precipitous withdrawal when they are not ready to stand on their own feet right now, I believe, would lead, as the president mentioned yesterday, to a situation where millions of innocent civilians could lose their lives.
And Melissa, do you think that this is an issue that has as prominent a profile in the presidential race as it did before? You had Barack Obama constantly stressing the fact that he did not support the war. Have people moved on to other issues, or is this still a strong strain in who's going to be the next president of the United States?
Well, there's no question that the war in Iraq is going to continue to be a central issue. The problem is that if Democrats try to run on the war in Iraq, they're going to very quickly realize that whoever is the Republican nominee for the presidency was not a member of the Bush administration. At the moment, all of the Democratic candidates are running against the current Bush administration, and soon they will notice that they're going to have an opponent who is not Bush and is not from the Bush administration. And almost all of them can pretty clearly say that they had very little to do with the set of decisions to go into the war. So I think that Americans are still very angry about the sets of issues that got us into the war. But Ron Christie is correct. What are we going to do now that we are there? And I really am opening this up as a question. I think this central concern should be whether or not more civilians are losing their lives as a result of our presence or our potential withdrawal.
Ron, want to move on to another issue in presidential politics. Karl Rove made a point of Senator Hillary Clinton's favorability rating, saying she was too unpopular to take executive office. Now, the latest Gallup poll has the Clinton favorability rating at 47%. Not exactly great, but Gallup points out that other presidents, including Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, had similar ratings before they were sworn into the White House. Is this a miscalculation by Rove?
I don't think it's a miscalculation by Rove. I think what he said was right, that Senator Clinton goes into the nomination process as a flawed candidate in the sense that half the country doesn't like her. But just because an individual might be a flawed candidate doesn't mean that they can't win. Senator Clinton has many strengths, obviously. She was elected to the United States Senate from New York, and there are a lot of people around the country who do have a favorable impression. But I do believe what Carl said the other week was correct, in that entering the nomination for her party's position to run as the candidate for president of the United States, she is flawed given her high negative ratings in comparison to the rest of the field of individuals who were seeking the same nomination.
Melissa, another question about Karl Rove. He made an appearance on Meet the Press this week, and in conversation, NBC's David Gregory, Karl Rove stated he did not owe Valerie Plame an apology. He was blameless in his role of unmasking her role as a CIA agent. Now, Matt Cooper of Time also went on TV, said that he was hinting, basically. Didn't say outright, but hinting that Rove was the leak. What's the state of play on this, and are people really going to reach a resolution before Karl Rove leaves?
I suspect no resolution will be reached, and that Karl Rove is signaling to us in his discussion about Hillary Clinton, which, by the way, I think is accurate. I think Karl Rove is absolutely correct that Hillary Clinton cannot win the U.S. presidency if she is nominated by the Democrats. And I think that we, that Democratic strategists would be really it would be odd for us to ignore what Karl Rove is telling us about the capacity of the Republicans to launch a campaign against Hillary Clinton, and that this should go into the decisions being made by early primary voters who are Democrats.
Now, let me just interrupt you. You just said that you don't think Hillary Clinton is electable. I want to make sure that we heard that.
That is correct. It is not only that she has high negative ratings, it's also that she has very high certainty ratings. So the candidates that you talked about before who had high negative ratings also had high uncertainty ratings. In other words, there was a great deal of learning that the American public still needed to do. That is not the situation with Hillary Clinton. The American public has largely made up their minds. Further, it's not just Gallup would have us believe that it's a national contest. It is not. It is a state-by-state contest in the Electoral College. Her favorability ratings, when you look at them state by state, lead every single time to a vastly losing Electoral College strategy, period. Her negatives are geographically dispersed in a way that leads Hillary Clinton to lose the American presidency.
All right. Well, we have to leave it there. Ron, I know you would love to jump in, but Melissa.
I'm just going to say I agree with everything she said.
All right. Ron and Melissa, thanks so much.
Thanks, Farai.
I've been speaking with Melissa Harris-Lacewell, Associate Professor of Politics and African American Studies at Princeton University. She joined me from the studios at Princeton, and Ron Christie, Vice President of the lobbying firm DC Navigators and a former Special Assistant to President George W. Bush.